But another important point that has to do with these boundaries is then not only are people not allowed to opt out, but actually people aren't allowed to have a lawyer if they go to these courts, and certain cases are not appealable. As I pointed out, that some of these sanctions, so sanctions, for example, like if you're compelled to perform forced labor, so-called for the benefit of the community, then you can't appeal that case. Or if the traditional court says, the traditional leader says that you are prohibited from doing a certain thing, then you can't appeal that. And actually, if he gives you an order under this general clause, any other order that the traditional court may deem fit, which is a very broad power indeed, you also can't appeal that. And in fact, reviews are themselves limited in such ways that would make it very difficult for people in those communities to challenge decisions that are made by their traditional leaders. And in fact, the decisions made by the traditional leaders would be final and would have the status of magistrates' courts' decisions. So finally, we get to some of the particular concerns that women raise. I've suggested some along the way, which actually are exacerbated by the traditional courts bill. So two primary issues were raised by women in the South African Law Reform Commission process, and actually subsequently in some of the consultations that we've been doing around the bill. And the first is that traditional courts are typically comprised of men, right? So counselors and, you know, elders, as the people who get to participate in decision making, are typically men. And often women have a difficult time presenting their cases to them because they don't feel like they're very sympathetic. And actually, in many instances, women claim that the courts tend to favor men, especially when they bring cases of family disputes. And there was a recent study actually by Curry and Bontes, which talked about domestic violence in traditional courts. And their conclusion was basically that women don't often get a very sympathetic hearing in traditional courts when they bring domestic violence cases. But you will note that domestic violence has not been excluded from the traditional court's jurisdiction. And so essentially women argued that there was a need for the inclusion of women in the composition of courts, and that has not happened under the traditional courts bill. The second thing that women were concerned about was the fact that often women aren't permitted to attend traditional courts, or if they are permitted to attend them, they're not permitted to speak for themselves. They have to be represented by a male. And women raise concerns in particular about the fact that they are, especially when they're in mourning, right, and they're wearing their mourning attire, they're considered to be unclean. And so they're not allowed to come into quote-unquote sacred spaces, which is where traditional courts are typically held, in places like kraals or places where only men can go. And also they're not allowed to come before the chief. And so how are you going to bring your case to the chief if, you know, nesnyama, you've got this darkness over you? And so women were saying, actually, like, we need to be able to speak for ourselves. We need to be able to represent ourselves in these dispute resolution cases, because often we're facing eviction in the context of mourning because our in-laws are wanting to kick us out, or our brothers are wanting to kick us out of the family home. But then if we have to be represented by a man, if it's my brother who's trying to kick me out of the family home, he's the very same man who's supposed to represent me, right? Because he's my older brother. And so you have a conflict right there. And so ultimately women asked to be able to represent themselves, but the problem with the traditional courts bill here is that it doesn't allow for that. So, I mean, it says in technical terms that husbands can represent wives and wives can represent husbands in accordance with customary law. Now, I've just told you what customary law says, right? Customary law says women are to be represented by men. Never does it say men are to be represented by women. And so it's just a way of pretending that they're addressing the concern, whereas actually they're really entrenching the very same position. And more than that, it says that there's no provision for women to form part of the traditional courts, and there's a provision in Clause 9 which talks about how women should be able to, how the presiding officer should ensure that women are able to participate in the court process. But the problem is that the obligation is on the presiding officer, and he, as an individual, could be a person who just doesn't think that women's equality is a critical issue. And so he doesn't, you know, he may not implement that. And frankly, if he's not there, and it's the councillors who are acting, there's no obligation on them to ensure that women get to participate equally as well. I think I will leave it at that and not go into my example.
Maybe you can go into the staff when you're
yes.
question. So.
Yes. Let's just give Cindy a hand at this point. Hell of a lot. For those of us who did know about the bill, she's given us an overview of the bill, its history, its problems, and some efforts that Cindy herself has been involved in with other organizations in trying to put the case across with, you know, some of the concerns, very, very clear concerns. I'm not going to repeat them, which is very articulate. Just want to open up to questions, concerns, the discussion, to pull you into this, because I sensed a lot of body language. I want to hear what's the word behind some of the body language. Yeah.
In terms of the hierarchy of the court, of the system, where would the traditional court be placed? Would it be placed on the same level as a magistrate's court or a high court? So then that means that any case that comes before that would it then be allowed, if you cannot appeal within the traditional court system, would you then be allowed to appeal within, you know, the Supreme Court of Appeals, or would all cases be limited to the traditional court?
Well, taking into account the fact that some cases are just not appealable at all, those that are appealable, you could appeal to the magistrate's court. So the bill says that traditional court's decisions are final and are of equal status as magistrate's court's decisions, but notwithstanding that, this you can actually appeal to the magistrate's court, and from there you could appeal further into the system. I suppose the one concern there is that a lot of people don't actually have the resources to take a case to even the high court. I mean, you know, let alone actually take it as far as the constitutional court where you can actually overturn the piece of legislation. Because ultimately, in some cases, people wouldn't be able to appeal on substantive grounds. And so the only way that they would have to challenge the actions performed by the traditional leader in that case would be to challenge the legislation itself.
Any more questions?
Yes. What's the likelihood of this bill actually going to be passed, given how problematic it is under the Constitution, so the constitutional violations that it poses, as well as just the fact that it doesn't make sense? How likely is it to actually be passed?
Sure, that's difficult to say. I mean, I would have said a year ago that it was very, very likely to be passed. But subsequent sort of actions seem to suggest that, particularly the Department of Justice briefing to the National Council of Provinces Select Committee when they reintroduced the bill, suggests that they've now taken the criticisms on, they keep saying we're taking them on board. I'm not sure what that means. But they are certainly grappling with them, I think. And I think part of that has to do with the Communal Land Rights Act, which was a piece of legislation that was about as bad as the traditional courts bill and was actually passed. It was passed in 2004, just before the elections. And of course, that's significant because a lot of these pieces of legislation get passed just before the elections because the government, our ruling party, believes that traditional leaders bring the rural vote. And so the Communal Land Rights Act was passed, and it was very problematic, and it was challenged right up to the Constitutional Court. And the decision on that came out in May of 2010, where the Constitutional Court declared it unconstitutional in its entirety. I should say, though, that that was on the basis of a procedural argument that they hadn't consulted adequately with rural people, which argument actually stands in this case as well. But as a result of that case, it sounds like the government's gotten a little bit nervous about passing these kinds of legislation. But at the same time, we've also been told in the corridors of Parliament by ANC officials that they know that it's bad and they're counting on us to challenge it. Challenge it through litigation, which is itself really worrying, right? If, as we go up to come up to Mangaung, this legislation then were to get passed in order to meet the same demands around elections that existed around the Communal Land Rights Act, and then they were just counting on us to challenge it subsequently in the Constitutional Court. So it could go either way, is really the answer.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, Let's say, for example, if this bill gets put in place, and myself as a colored female, maybe just happened to move, let's say, to Tata, or to one of those areas that you can send from back, would I have to abide by those rules?
Good question. I should say that you wouldn't even have to move there. So the bill says any person. It doesn't say necessarily a person who's living there. I should tell you the backstory to that. The reasons for that are partly to do with the fact that the Black Authorities Act, the Black Administration Act of 1927, which this piece of legislation is supposed to replace, spoke about a black person residing in that area or a black person who performed a crime in that area. And of course, in the effort to try and overturn that kind of racism that says that only black people are subject to traditional authorities and customary law or whatever, they've taken that out. But what that means is that anybody, even a person who doesn't actually know the law of that particular place, if you were passing through, because many of us go to, you know, rural areas to visit family or on holiday or whatever, so if you were passing through and you happened to commit an offence that you were unaware of, and you got called before the traditional court, you, as much as the next person who actually does live there, would not have the right to opt out. So you would have to have your case heard there. And then subsequently, depending on whether you can appeal or not, then you might get to another court. So yeah, any person is subject there.
So you're simply a part of the community trying to
Yeah, so if you moved there, you would definitely be subject to it. Yeah, all the more so.
Have you guys been doing any research in perhaps like presenting a different way of, because obviously the bill has so many problems, but the one thing you mentioned in the beginning was that it does solve the problem that it gives access to a form of justice to so many people, so that practical solution. So, I mean, are there any people working on a whole new way of thinking of forming this so that that can still be
actually we've been doing quite a bit of research. I just I'm about to wrap up a 11-month study of traditional courts in KZN in the Msinga area, and we picked Msinga because that's one of the places where actually customary law is still relatively intact, and the one area the traditional leader is not as legitimate as in the other area where he's very highly legitimate. And so what we wanted to get a sense of is what does customary law look like and what do traditional courts function like when they're working well? And actually it's really fascinating because there are some very positive things about customary courts, which I can't fathom why the government wouldn't adopt those. Things like the fact that actually it's a relatively inclusive process of dispute resolution. So the fact that you have a traditional court where it's not a presiding officer like in the Magistrates Court, but it's actually a council of decision makers. And in fact, in many studies dating back to the early 20s of the previous century, and all the way through, reflect repeatedly the fact that the traditional leader never was the person who made the decision in dispute. He merely announced at the end what had been spoken by his counsel, and the counselors had it upon themselves to consult with ordinary members of the community because he didn't want to, fall out of favor with his community. And so it was really important for him to maintain the legitimacy with his community. But of course, when apartheid came in, it completely dislocated that by virtue of the fact that now traditional leaders appealed to the apartheid government for their authority. They didn't need to prove legitimate or accountable to their people anymore for them to maintain power. In fact, you could lose power by maintaining accountability and legitimacy to your people. And so actually, I think that's something that you could give effect to. And more than that, actually, when not just the council gets to participate in dispute resolution, but actually ordinary people. So many accounts and even the ones that, the study that I've been doing show that ordinary people, particularly men, specifically men, but any man can participate in the dispute resolution process. And so what a piece of legislation like this should be doing is giving greater inclusivity, not less, right? So not like screening out all of these other participants, but actually saying where typically it's the council, which is mostly men, and any ordinary man who's a member of the community, an older man typically, who can participate. Instead of just focusing on those people, we're going to also include women, right? So women can form part of the constitution of the Dispute Resolution Council, and women can also come and participate as members of the community in dispute resolution. That's just one example. I do think that there are also things that are problems, right? Like the testimonies about women's experiences are very real. And those, a piece of legislation like this should be uncompromising on. It should, you know, be saying this is the purpose of the Constitution, just to serve as a backstop where even customary law isn't functioning well, because even customary law is subject to our Bill of Rights. And so it should intervene here to protect women.
Thank you very much. I'm just noticing that it's almost 10 to, so I'll take the last round of questions. If you have something you really wanted to say before we cut you short, you can push that in. People might start leaving, but go ahead.
Okay.
So I see a question there, and there was somebody else here. Oh no, I shouldn't have said that. Everyone's going now.
It's very Eric. I just want to know if there are any prominent traditional leaders who are adamantly opposed to this.
Interesting. I mean, I've got to say that we haven't met any, except those who aren't actually recognized. So traditional leaders who are recognized tend to be more or less in favor of it and tend to more or less defend it. Although the chairperson of the Congress of Traditional Leaders has recently come out to say, well, there is the problem of the fact that it doesn't recognize multiple layers of courts within the traditional system, because there obviously isn't just the chief's court. There's the family court, there's the ward council, there's the headman's court, there's the village council, and only there can you get to the chief's court. And so he said that's a problem, but we can fix it. You know, and he's not really talking about the wider concerns. Yeah, but they are traditional leaders, as I said, mostly those who aren't officially recognized, you know, those who were disentitled, disenfranchised by the apartheid government, who are saying this is unacceptable.
There was one last question there.
Yeah. I'd like to know, why is it called a traditional constable? Because there's nothing traditional about it. Mm. First of all, our tradition, we're guided by culture. If at all they want to revive a traditional constable, they should just trash all these documents into a trash bin. Our culture is not guided by books or documents. Mm. It's not. They're just going to mess everything up. They should just respect. That's how we are, cultural people, African people. We don't do this.
So one last time, yes.
I just wanted to ask, how does this bill allow for different cultures and traditions? So surely it's not one tradition amongst people. So how are those inflections represented in people?
Well,
so like you
okay.
So you can have a reading in one place that says this was a tradition and the other culture says no, that's not. So how does that work? Mm-hmm. Like, particularly for sexual offences cases, domestic violence cases.
Okay, and there's one last
question. Just to add on to that, in terms of customary laws, there are different customary laws. I mean, there's the customary laws of amateurs, so we can't limit it to that. And then also on the matter of opting out, I mean, Zorani Mkiva himself said that there's a provision in that bill that says you can approach the magistrate's bill if you're not satisfied. So I fear that you're selling fear to a large extent, because they are not totally autonomous, they're also still under the Ministry of Justice. Mm-hmm. They're still very much under that, and even the fines and the systems are still limited by the Ministry of Justice in that. Mm-hmm. There are head women, there are queens, there are all sorts of things who are involved in this whole process. So I think it's selling one angle. And not looking at the case of rural people, looking at the fact of delayed justice from the perspective of the Western court system. It's not working for them at all. I mean, there are problems there. Things being classified as petty theft or petty crimes, which are in actual fact real crimes for them. I mean, Khayelitsha right now has got a case of vigilantism where they're killing people. Why are they killing those people? Because the laws that you have right now aren't working. And we're using a framework and constitution that wasn't founded with these people we're now criticizing. They weren't involved when the constitution was drawn up. So we need to look at those things. And the thing of apartheid spaces, that is a lie. Those spaces are tribal and are classified according to Amapondo. They're 12 clans. So, you know, and I'm speaking from an Eastern Cape Trans guy region. I'm not speaking for KZN or the other regions up there, but those things were also defined before apartheid in terms of where other people would be and how they would work. And I believe that they're still classifying themselves according to tribes. So I feel there's a bit of distortion and selling an angle that is anti this bill that sort of doesn't want it to establish itself and for those people to govern themselves.
Hmm. Wow. Interesting. Okay, let me see if I can remember all of your questions. So the first is about whether there is a provision for different kinds of custom, only to the extent that it just says that it, the court has to function according to customary law. It didn't specify what the customary law is, but presumably the senior traditional leader will have to decide according to the custom that he's familiar with. And chances are that, you know, he doesn't have as much insight into the customs or the detail of the customs of other communities. And there are communities where there are real mixes of people. And so, I mean, just to say to the gentleman, I don't think that the boundaries are as clear as you're saying at all. I do agree that there are places where the party government intervenes less than in other places. And, I mean, I think even in the Eastern Cape, so compare the trans guy to the cis guy. In the cis guy, people are saying, we don't know who this chief is who's now imposing himself over us because chiefs were done away with. We now elect our headman, and so it is our headman who's been elected by the community that we want to have observed. But these laws come in and say, no, actually, you have to have a headman who's elected by a royal family. Which royal family? The chief's royal family. And there is no chief, right? Because there's no legitimate recognized chief. And I think that's a problem that you have to contend with, because you're talking about a version of culture. I totally accept that there is a version of culture where actually customary law is working, and actually the boundaries that are in existence are more or less the ones that existed beforehand. Having said that, in many places they were constricted, in other words, made smaller than what had existed beforehand. And so even there, actually, there's an imperfection with regards to these tribal boundaries. And so I think, I mean, to the extent that maybe I am setting an angle that's against this bill, it's because I genuinely believe that this bill is inconsistent with customary law. I think it's inconsistent with people being able to govern their own lives. And I'm talking about people as not just their traditional leaders. I'm talking about people as ordinary people who have to have the right to determine what system of law they want to live under, because that's what the Constitution provides for them. The right to culture under our Constitution is phrased in terms of choice. You have the right to choose whether you want to live under the system of law or under the system of life and religion. And I think that that's a right that has to be recognized for ordinary people, not just for their traditional leaders. And so insofar as the point about people being able to go to the magistrate's court, the only way, so there are cases where people can appeal, as I told you, but there are cases where people cannot appeal. So you can't, I'm sorry?
That's not in the bill.
That is in the bill. I can show you, I've got the bill. It definitely is in the bill, where there's certain cases where people cannot appeal. And there are also certain cases, I'm sorry, then there are certain cases where a person can take the issue to the Minister of Justice as a, to lay a complaint against the traditional leader. Now, I would argue against that. Why? Because I think to exclude an appeal in a certain instance and only leave people with a remedy that says you have to go and lay a complaint against your traditional leader is utterly disempowering for ordinary rural people, especially for rural women who can scarcely actually like talk to their chief looking at them straight. And now this person has to go to the minister, where they're going to find the minister to begin with. But secondly, then go to the minister and say, actually, I have a problem with this man. This man. Why not allow people to just appeal? And, not even appeal. Why not allow people to opt out of the system? If they believe that their traditional leader is illegitimate and he makes decisions that are inconsistent with justice, let them quietly slip away and go to the magistrate's court, rather than having to take their chief on head on and say, I disapprove of your conduct.
Okay, there's obviously lots more. Let's give topic. There's a lot of work to be done. There are the hearings coming up.
Yes.
So keep your ears to the ground or to Google or to Cindy. There's Laurie Sandela project or to us, and let us know if you would like to know more about, you know, where you can talk about this in other spaces. I'm sure there's other spaces.
Yes.